right down at all your feet. Take you home with me. Put you in my house. Boom, 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 boom.
Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. It was something of a shock to hear that Bobby Roberts was retiring as director of the Central Arkansas Library System. Under his leadership, so much has developed. The buildings that now serve the downtown campus of the River Market District, a children's library, neighborhood libraries built where the need was apparent. Bobby came to talk about his decision, so of course we went back a bit. Born in Helena, well known for its blues festival, a graduate of Helena Central High School, as he tells it, gave little indication of what he has since achieved. And how?
Graduated, I say barely graduated from Central in 1962, I think. And we graduated in rank order, and I think I was about number 104 out of 108 or something like that. So I was not a great student. A lot of catching up to do. So I was not what you would call university material, much less PhD material. That happens much later.
Where did you get this interest in history then?
Of course, Helena's a Civil War site, and I grew up thinking I was in Civil War trenches when we were out playing. Of course, they were just ravines, and I had an interest in it as a child. I didn't – when I did go to college, I was majoring in business. I was not majoring in history. That switch came after a little bit of time in the Navy, and I came back and said I actually left the College of Business, to be honest with you, because I just couldn't stand it anymore. And I thought, between the College of Business and the Navy, I'll take the Navy. When I came back, I said, I'm gonna major in what I'm interested in. I'm not going to worry about whether I can get a job. I'm gonna be a historian.
And so you got your bachelor's degree where?
At the University of Central Arkansas.
Okay.
And then I got my master's and PhD at the University of Arkansas.
And then you were on faculty teaching at some point?
I was a graduate assistant in Fayetteville, and I took a break in there and went to the University of Oklahoma and got a master's degree in library science because I had, as a graduate student, I'd worked in special collections, and I really got interested in the collection of papers. And so I thought, well, I need to get a degree that will lead me in that direction. So I ended up with a MLS, a master's degree in library science, and a PhD in history. Life leads you in strange twists, I've learned.
It?
Most of the places I've ended up, I had no intention of being there. It just happened, you know. So.
Well, I wondered that it was maybe a teacher who fired you up when you were at school, because that so often happens that somebody comes in, and I know that happened to me as well.
Most of my undergraduate career, I actually quit college when I was a senior. I had about 30 hours to go, and I just can't take it anymore. When I came back with a better attitude and a little more – I settled down, and I had been out a little bit, and just came back and decided I really need to be a serious student. But I had a lot of ground to make up, and when you've got a 2-point average and you've got to get up to about a 3-point to get in graduate school, it was a hard pull for me, but I got there.
Did you get a lot of coaching, or did you just read up and figure out how to do that?
I did. I'm not a very fast reader, but I'm a methodical reader. And I spent an enormous amount of time getting up to speed. I'd taken history courses as an undergraduate because they were fun. I'd just go or get tired of, you know, marketing or accounting. I'd go take a course in Western history. So I had a little bit, kind of a smattering of courses. So I had to sort of knit all that together. And so when I was in graduate school, I realized how far behind I actually was in my understanding and reading, and so I had to spend a lot of time just getting that base in place that I should have gotten as an undergraduate. So, and I've always felt like I was behind in where I need to be. So, you know, here I am 71 years old, and I'm still reading general history. So I'm still catching up.
Were you a good reader when you were growing up, going through grade school, or was it one of the other chores that you felt you had to do but weren't really interested in what you were reading?
I enjoyed reading, and I didn't come from a family that read a lot. My parents were newspaper and magazine readers, but not book readers. But I picked that up in high school. Actually, it's interesting. The first thing I really ever read I was interested in was a Hardy Boy novel, which were very – somebody gave me one, and they were very popular, and they're easy to read for young – children. And so I started reading those, and that eventually led me into, more sophisticated reading. But I got started in a kind of a happenstance sort of way.
I know our kids, Neil, loved the Hardy Boys, and my daughter loved the Nancy Drew. mysteries.
Yeah. I've got almost a complete set of them up in my attic. And I, in fact, about 2 years ago, I tried to figure out the first one I had read and found the one I thought that it was maybe the first Hardy Boy book I'd read and reread it just to see what it was like. And I thought, you know, for a child of 10 or 12 years old, they're still interesting adventure stories. And you know, they're a little dated, but it was fun to read it. And I do that a lot. I go back and read books that I read 30 years ago to see if they made an impression on me then, but they still make an impression on me. About 50-50, I think, and whether or not I think, why am I reading these again? And sometimes I think, now I understand why this book was important to me.
Yeah. Library and Civil War makes sense, but the political interests that reared its ugly head when you were coming, how did that happen?
Again, it was sort of happenstance. I got involved in politics through Bill Clinton, who was at the time was running for governor. First time he ran for governor, and the chairman of the history department was the Democratic committee person in Washington County, and he said, "Why don't you go out and meet Bill Clinton? He's running for governor." And I said, I don't care anything about that. And he said, well, it's out at the Shack, which was a barbecue place. And I thought, well, I'm hungry and a starving graduate student. I'll go out there. So I met him, and when I came out of the line, I had about 25 postcards to send to my friends. And I sort of got interested in politics by being just barely involved in that campaign. So it was just, again, it was kind of happenstance. I had no particular interest in it until I had a chance to be involved in it in a small way. And then over the years, it became bigger and bigger.
You never knew where that was going.
Well, you never know where that's going to go. You know? And I was lucky enough to work for him a couple of years when he was governor, and then was a legislative aide for him for 10 or 11 years. So I did I learned a lot from doing that. I met a lot of interesting people, and it was a very important kind of growing up period for me to get to do that.
Was a lot of your reading of history sort of in the way you read it or the books that you read have information on government and politics?
You know, they did to some extent, Anne, but what they really did was teach you a way to think. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain that to people, but some fields are really not there for specific information, but to teach you how to think. And I was the only PhD on the staff, and most of the people that I dealt with were lawyers, and we were trained in two different ways of trying to get at the truth. And we used to talk a lot about that. You know, there's an adversarial relationship with lawyers. They're just, you know, each side's trying to build its case. The historian's trying to look at all the evidence and draw some conclusions from them. And that's very useful when you're on the staff because you come into it with a critical spirit of looking at things and trying to find out what the truth really is as close as you can get. You never get to the truth, but you can get closer. Mm-hmm. So it was a useful way of thinking, and I think like a historian, and I use history every day in my work. It's never far away from me, although it has nothing to do with, you know, what happened in England in 1412 or something. It's a process as much as anything. It's very useful.
When you were, say you were on staff at this point, what staff was that?
I was on his what was generally known as the second administration when he came back in office in 1983. By that time, I'd gotten the political bug. I was actually a travel aide with him in that race against Frank White, which was Frank White had defeated him in 1980. Bill ran again in 82 and was elected. So I was a travel aide along with Bruce Lindsay and Dave Crowder and a few other people. And I just got bitten with a political bug. I was working at UALR, took a leave from UALR, and went on the staff as his liaison to public safety, which I knew nothing about. And in fact, I started out as liaison to the Department of Corrections, to the prisons. And an old dear friend of mine out here, Bob Sarver, had been commissioner of corrections. And I went over to see Bob, and I said, "Bob, I don't know anything about this. I'm reluctant to do it. What should I do?" And he said, "Well, you ought to do it." He said, "You know, it'll be an interesting job." And he said, "When you get through with it, the governor won't like you, the General Assembly won't like you, the inmates won't like you, nobody will like you." And he was right. But it was a great experience to deal with the Department of Correction.
And how long were you there? Just a couple of years?
I did that for 2 years. I was on his staff for 2 years, and I was on leave from UALR, so I came back. And I really was burned out. I tell everyone should work for a politician once, and no one should do it twice. It's a burnout job. And so I came back out here, and about a year later, I was appointed to the Board of Correction. So I served another 8 years on the board. And then every legislative session, I would take leave from the university and go back and be one of the legislative liaisons. So I did that for, I think, 11 years. So I had a lot of legislative experience.
Yeah. And then you had to sort of think fast when you're in any kind of position in government, I expect.
It's much more complicated than people think, and there's a lot of politics to it, but there's a lot of internal detail, and you have to learn a lot. But it was a great experience. And I have high regard for people I worked with on Governor Clinton's staff, and I have high regard for the men and women in the General Assembly. And that's a tough job to do, too. And, you know, if you took all 134 of them, a few of them were not good at it. Some of them were serious. Some of them were not smart. Some of them were brilliant. It was no different than 134 people out here, you know, working for UALR. But I came away with a lot of respect for what they did.
Yeah. So what then got you into the library circuit, as you might say?
Well, I came back out to UALR. I was running the archives and special collections. And when I left the governor's staff, I was really out of energy. So I came back out here, worked at the university for a while, which is a great experience. I love UALR, and I enjoyed my job. But I was used to a fast pace. I was used to running at a fast pace. And I literally, a friend of mine was chair of the Central Arkansas Library System Board, and I was actually watching a baseball game, drinking a beer one Saturday, and she called me up and said, would you come down and run the library system for us for about 6 months? They were going to let the person go, and they needed somebody to run it for about 6 months. And I said, I don't even know where the public library is. I've barely been in the building. I don't know much about it. And I said, well, how much does it pay? And it was paying about $15,000 than I made. And I said, I'll be down there Monday. So I really went down there, again, just on a happenstance, and thought I would be there 6 months.
And this was the old
building. That was in May of 1983 when I went down there. 1987, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. And then step by step, you took a job that put you where when you joined the library?
Well, you know, I went down there, and I had to rely on what turned out to be an excellent staff. We had some really good people working for the library at that time, but we didn't have any money. And the more I saw it and the more I dealt with it, the more I realized that they're really interesting institutions, unique almost to the English-speaking world. And they provide a wonderful service. They're underappreciated oftentimes and underfunded. And I just sort of really fell in love with the idea of the public library. And, you know, I was, 42, I guess, at the time, 43. And I said, that took me that long to find out what I wanted to do. I had never found anything I really wanted to do until I was 43. So, you know, if you don't know what you're going to do when you're 20 or 30, don't worry about it. You know, something will come along. Mm-hmm. And it fit together with me, and I enjoyed it. It was part political. It was part public service. It was doing work for the community. And so all those things sort of fit in with what I really had been doing in a scattered sort of way.
So were you in the front then, or the person who proposed finding another building?
I was. The first problem we faced in Arkansas was we had a constitutional prohibition that said you can only raise $1 million for library operations. When that was passed in 1940, that was a fairly progressive bit of legislation, but you couldn't run anything on $1 million by the 90s. And so the first thing we had to do was to get the Constitution changed. Well, as it turned out, even after I went down to the library, the governor's office would call me up and say, would you come down here and work for us in the session? So I said, sure, I will. If you'll help us get the Constitution amended, I'll come down there and help you with the session. So they said yes, they would do that. So we actually drew up an amendment to the Constitution, and it was one of the three amendments that was reported out and became the instrument that allowed public libraries to be better funded. So we actually had to get the Constitution amended first, and that was done in It was done the same year that Bill Clinton was running for president in 1992. We were lucky enough to get it passed. We got a better vote in Arkansas than he did. I was proud of that. So we amended the Constitution. That's when our system began to take off, because we actually could go to the voters then and ask for money to operate it and operate it the way it should be done.
Well, I can remember talking to you about the phones building, because that was virtually lying empty.
It was.
And that you had gone into it and seen what it had been used to holding, and they had the floors you needed for a library with all the weight that books make.
Right.
And I remember vividly you saying that, and it was almost handmade for you.
It was. It turned out to be a good choice. And it was another one of those things where the building was in receivership, and a lawyer friend of mine was handling all that. He kept saying, go down and look at the phones building. And I thought, well, I'll do it just as a favor to him because I'm tired of listening to him. And I went into it, and I thought, gosh, it's in the right location because we serve the entire county. It's right there on the interstate. It's easy to get to. Big, strong building, good price on it, a big rectangle, which is easy to build in. After we got in it, I told somebody, it's like if buildings have a life, then it was like it wanted to be picked up and be something, you know, and it wanted to be a public library. And it's been a wonderful building. We've had almost no trouble with it. We've been able to grow into it because we had extra space. And it just feels like it, even today, it feels like it's just running along like it should.
And I remember going into it after it opened the first time, when you know, right at the beginning, and getting this wonderful feeling.
Yeah, it's a great building. Yes. It's not a fancy building, but it just has a great feel when you're in it. And
Sits there very solidly. And
it's
not
going to fall in. It's a heavily built building, which was exactly what we needed because of the weight of the books and so forth. And it's just been a wonderful building for the system, and it's very visible, which is useful too.
As you say, off the interstate and coming down into it. And the other buildings that have been rectified or built on it as it's spread, and now we refer to the Cowles campus.
Right, and that's how we think of it as a campus, really, because it's now, let's see, it's about four buildings, and then we're building a parking deck, which we should have done a long time ago, but we're finally getting around to that. So it really is a little teeny campus in downtown Little Rock. And of course, UALR, the Department of Archives, is in there with us, and that's a great partnership.
One of the younger editions that you've had has been the literary festival each year, and the whole downtown blooms. It just is such fun, the people that you meet. And
it's been interesting to watch it change. And the Lit Fest is coming up in April, which we are delighted to do. It's good for the community. It gives us a good image, and the turnout's good. And our view of the library has been that the books and the circulation and all of that's important, but we need to do other community services and bring as many people into partnerships with us and bring as many people in to the library for different reasons. And so if you look at it now, our book circulation is flattening out because of digital books, but those are going up, so that's good. We're in a transition. And then our programming for adults and children continues to grow at a rapid rate. So libraries are coming, particularly urban libraries, I think are becoming more community centers than they were 20 years ago. And that's a good thing to see. That means they're going to be here for a long time.
I was just thinking when I was writing out my notes to talk to you, what a pity you weren't around before they raised the Carnegie Library.
The old building was a beautiful building. Yeah. It's terrible that it was taken down. At some point it wouldn't function as a library, but it's a shame that the fabric of the building was torn down. But that happened in the 60s when a lot of wonderful buildings were taken down in the name of progress. And had that building been there now, it would have certainly been retrofitted into something.
So several of these older buildings that have survived the parking lot era,
right,
have been remodeled into very useful buildings as a result.
That's correct. Yeah. There's a lot of buildings that are being saved now that just a few years ago would have been taken down. Mm-hmm. So that's a great, you know, to save that part of our. And we're, I think, more likely to tear all that down in the South than we are in New England or somewhere. They're much better at preserving their central city than we are.
I think the Rep was one of the earlier ones to start interest in taking an old building and giving it a humanity, as you might say, that would save it in years to come, one hopes. So now you've got a few weeks left where you'll be dabbling your fingers in the pool of the Central Arkansas Library System, and you'll probably never leave that in terms of watching over other people's shoulders to see what's going on. But what do you have in mind?
I'd like to go back and do what I started out to do, which is be a historian. What I'd like to do is go back to doing some research. I'm a Civil War historian by training. I told somebody I don't know how fond I am of the Civil War anymore, but I'm too old to change fields. So I'd like to go back. Carl Moneyhon, a dear friend of mine on the faculty here, we've over the years written Civil War pieces together. Mm-hmm. We're going to do some things together, and I'm going to try to go back and be a historian, but I tell people that's much more difficult than the job I'm doing. The job I'm doing is one of these, it's an administrative job, so things just come at me and I have to deal with them. If you're going to be a historian, you got to go back and actually read the documents and discipline yourself to do that. And that's going to be a real transition for me to do.
Yeah. You have a goal, but where you're in the business right now, the goals are very practical.
That's right.
And you work on that.
And they're very immediate.
Yes. But something that you're going into in history is not an easy trade.
You know? It's a lonely sort of profession.
Yes.
I mean, I told someone, you can put the documents on your desk, but if you don't read them, they'll just sit there. You know, you actually have to discipline yourself, I think, to do the work. Mm-hmm. And whereas my job is an externally driven job, I've got things just coming at me that have to be dealt with. And I'll frankly be glad to get away from that.
But you're dealing with people as much as anything else, where a historian, your field narrows where you're going, and you have to check and see if something that's really fired you up, that there are several people who have already written books on the same topic.
That's right.
And then you begin to narrow your field, and then you find yourself getting a bit bored because it's not as interesting as you thought it might be. So you spread your net a bit wider, and then, as you say, something happens.
Right. It's a whole different process.
Yes.
And I used to do it and had written a couple of books and a number of articles. I think I can get back to doing it, but talk to me in 6 months, I'll tell you how well that's going.
And it needn't necessarily be where you are physically now, because there are so many smaller spots of the all around the state,
right,
that have a history and traditions that go from Hemingway down to pre-Civil War and virtually back to Indian territory.
That's true, and the internet has changed the way you can do historical research. I was going through my files from many years ago, and I have hundreds and hundreds of letters that were written to libraries inquiring if they had any documents. Now, with a couple of keystrokes, you can look at all of that. So that's changed the way you can do research. And, of course, a lot of documents are online, but it's certainly given you access to a lot of things. The other thing that's changed historical research and is overlooked is eBay, because it's just brought out documents and photographs and so forth, things that are there for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And, the universities don't always have the money to buy them. We buy a lot of material for our Arkansas collection off eBay. But they've pushed out a lot of things that were in private hands that are now being purchased by libraries and universities. And unfortunately, some of them are going into private collectors and disappearing. But they've still forced out a lot of material that you wouldn't have seen without it.
Now, your focus from birth seems to have been Arkansas. Would you be tempted out of state to another part of this huge country?
Oh, I'm born and raised in Arkansas. I get mad at the state about half the time and the way we do, but it's my home, and I would never leave here, I don't think. I like to travel in the country. There are great places to see. This will always be my home. And Little Rock is my – even though I was born in Helena, Little Rock to me is where I belong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because the states themselves, every one of them, you find when you're next to a Texan in East Texas, down in South Arkansas, that there's no dividing line.
Right. Arkansas is a slice of four or five surrounding states to me. And of course, I grew up in the Delta and more influenced by Memphis, Tennessee, and Mississippi than I would have been by Little Rock, you know. And, I mean, we relied on Memphis for our news. We shopped in Memphis. We went to the doctors in Memphis. We never went to Little Rock. It was a foreign country almost to my family, and that's true a lot of people in the Delta.
What about music? Did you get, without realizing it, a deep feeling for the music that you grew up with?
I did. I used to listen to the King Biscuit Boys, which is great, great blues, and it was improvised music for the most part. You never heard the same song twice, or at least not the same lyrics with it. And so I've always been a fan of the blues. I like bluegrass pretty well. I like blues better than anything. I listen to country western.
You never played an instrument?
My mother believed that a young man my age should do two things to keep him from being a barbarian. One was to take art, which I had no talent for. The other one was to take music, which I had no talent for. I took both of them. I can't do either one of them. I couldn't do them then. Music I wouldn't do because I wouldn't practice. When I was young, I was content to, you know, run loose in Helena, and that were those days where you could do that and, you know, hang out with my friends and run around in the hills. And I used to like to hunt and was, you know, pretty much what you would expect from somebody growing up in the Delta in the 50s.
Did you miss the river when you moved to Little Rock?
I do. I tell people if the Delta is a different part of the world to me. And I remember when I took my wife over there, I think it was in the wintertime, and the only color in the Delta in the wintertime is gray and brown and wet. I mean, that's about all there is. And she looked at me and said, "I don't know, why do you like this place so well?" And I said, "Well, it looks fine to me." I said, "I'm used to not seeing the sun for 6 months." So I feel comfortable in that sort of to what's depressing to some people, not to me, because I grew up in it. But yeah, Little Rock's a lot different. And, you know, the Arkansas River is a great river, but it's not the Mississippi. It's like comparing a creek, you know, to to a river to me. So we spent a lot of time on the river. I enjoyed, you know, that. Love Mark Twain's stories about the river.
But the downtown Little Rock has changed enormously since we moved here, and it's brought the river into the town, where before it was just, I couldn't believe it when we came here and saw how big the river was and how beautiful. But it only had railway lines and railway bridges and nothing to show that people were looking at it to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's one of the great assets of Little Rock, I think, and North Little Rock. When I came here, it was the same way. All the buildings have turned their back on the river, and we don't or did not see it as a recreational and kind of focal point of the city. That's beginning to change, as you know, because of the development that's going on down there, which I think is really good because the river really does add a lot to any city, I think, and we're beginning to take advantage of it. And so I think that the development of it was a little bit different of Little Rock, and so we're beginning to swing back in the other way, where Helena, when I grew up, was a real river town. A lot of shipping out of it. There was no bridge. You would take a ferry across the rivers like an adventure, you know, landed in the wilds of Mississippi and had to drive down a gravel road for 12 miles before you got out of there. It was a whole different place. But I think the downtown development in Little Rock's moving in the right direction. This I-30 issue and what we do with that is going to, of course, determine what that area looks like. It's a very complicated issue, I think.
Well, it has improved so enormously by using the downtown and the river as part of a living space.
It has, and I think particularly younger people, their lifestyle is different. Their willingness to live closer together than what I was used to makes the whole feel different. And there's a lot of fabric left in downtown Little Rock and a lot yet to be developed. And so I think that's a... Yeah, you know, that's a good sign, but the young people are going to drive that in the future. And so if we can get downtown right, I think Little Rock, North Little Rock have a great future.
Well, they've already joined hands compared with what it was when we came here, when anything done in North Little Rock or Little Rock would go diametrically opposed to each other.
Yeah, it's been an unfortunate situation for both sides of the river. Well, it's good to see it all come back because I grew up, Helena, when I grew up, had a wonderful main street, and that's where all the stores were. And, you know, there were lots of people walking around and visiting, and that's what you'd like to see get recreated. I think people, you know, I think we're social animals, and we want to get together, to meet together, to eat together, whatever. And you can do that in a compact space. You can't do it in a big, sprawling urban area.
Well, in whatever time it takes, you suddenly find what you're going to do. Call me and we'll do another interview.
That sounds good. I'll be glad to do that.
That was Bobby Roberts, retiring as director of the Central Arkansas Library System. His leadership in those years has led to a remarkable expansion of the number of neighborhood libraries and the services offered on the downtown River Market campus. Now, a quick reminder, Arkansas Rep has added 3 weekend extras to the season this spring, the first coming up February 19th through 21st on the main stage, an evening with Rebecca Wells and the Yaya Sisterhood, 7 p.m. each evening. Then 2 more, February the 24th through March the 5th, and March the 24th through 26th. These 2 in the Annex at 518 Main Street. Tickets for all 3 can be had through the box office, 501-378-0405, or at therep.org. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.